Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Southern Gothic is a podcast that explores the history behind some of the American South's darkest days, greatest mysteries, and most chilling ghost stories. Head southwest out of Logan, West Virginia, and you'll end up on some awful windy roads through the beautiful and lush landscape of the Appalachian Mountains. This part of the country has a pretty storied past, deeply intertwined with the coal industry. But the picturesque views that can be seen during the daylight hours aren't quite the same at night. As according to local lore, folks traveling along this one old mining road deep in the mountains of Logan County have encountered the apparition of a lady in white. If you've been listening to Southern Gothic for a while now, or you've just consumed your fair share of horror movies and ghost stories, you're probably familiar with this pretty stereotypical type of spirit, a mournful woman dressed in white, who's either haunting the site of her untimely death, searching for her lost love, or maybe, as is likely the case here on what is known as 22 Mine Road, she's looking for justice. Birmingham-based author and tour guide Wolfgang Poe described the most common version of this type of legend better than I ever could when he was interviewed on my old podcast, Ghost Tour.
And those are the ones that you can, that will talk to you and you can talk to them. You know, the classic white lady story, you pick them up on the side of the road. You go down the road, taking them home. You go over the bridge. For whatever reason, you look away. You look back. Your seat's wet. She's gone. And you find out later that bridge is where she jumped off the bridge for whatever reason. You know, that's the classic version of the story.
What Poe just described is exactly what folks claim happens on 22 Mine Road, where for almost a century, stories have been passed down of coal truck drivers picking up a woman in the middle of the night wearing antiquated clothing. But then, when she gets into the truck and the driver attempts to strike up a conversation with her, they are met with silence as the woman has vanished in thin air. But this West Virginia legend doesn't just stop there. According to locals, if you head out to a certain spot on a bridge located near 22 Mine Road on what's known as Corridor G, you park your car and then put it in neutral, this same infamous spirit will purportedly pull you right back up the hill, the car seemingly defying gravity, rolling upward without any natural explanation. And y'all, I ain't lying when I say there are more videos on YouTube than I can count of folks heading out there to this isolated strip of road to see for themselves. Of course, if you ask locals, they'll tell you exactly why this happens. As most claim that the spirit in question is a woman named Mamie Thurman, the victim of a horrific murder that remains unsolved after almost a century. And it's for this reason that people say her spirit pulls those cars back up the hill, as if she's urging folks to go back to where her slain body was found to help her find justice. My name is Brandon Schecksnyder, and you are listening to Southern Gothic. On the afternoon of Wednesday, June 22, 1932, Garland Davis was out picking berries on the side of 22 Mine Road, not far from where it meets with Highway 119. But to his surprise, as Davis crawled through a briar thicket, he found himself face to face with the dead body of a woman. She's about 30 years old, dark brown hair, weighed around 130 pounds, and was wearing a blue dress with white polka dots. The police were called, and the body was identified on the spot, as the officers knew exactly who she was, the wife of one of their patrolmen, Mamie Thurman. Fortunately or not, whoever had left her there did not attempt to hide what they had done, so the discovery by Davis was early enough that Mamie's remains were still in relatively good condition, and judging by the fact that the blue of her dress had stained her undergarments and blood seemed to have been washed away from the site, she must have been dumped there before it rained earlier that morning. Upon inspection, the police found she still had her wallet with $8 and some change inside, and since Mamie was also wearing an expensive watch as well as both her wedding and engagement rings, it appeared as if robbery was not the motive for the crime. In addition, Mamie was fully dressed, and there weren't any signs that what had happened was sexual in nature. Horrifically, though, Mamie's throat had been sliced from ear to ear, and she had suffered 2 bullet wounds to her head. The police determined that it was this brutal gash that ultimately killed her, and medical examiners later came to believe that the 2 shots, which came from a .38 caliber weapon pressed directly to her head, were a, quote, double tap, likely inflicted after she had already passed, strictly as a means to ensure that there was no way she could possibly survive. Mamie also had a broken neck at the 2nd cervical vertebrae, but they believe that this too came after her death, a result of being tossed out of a vehicle in haste. In addition, she had bruising on her face above her right eye, which suggested that before her throat was cut, she might have been involved in some type of altercation. Physicians Dr. W.S. Rowan and Dr. J.E. Robertson estimated that the time of death was between 12:30 and 2 a.m. that morning, about 12 hours before Garland Davis arrived. The West Virginia State Police were called in, and the Logan City Police and County Sheriff's offices began to work the case. And that evening, less than 24 hours after this terrible act of violence took place, 2 suspects were arrested for the murder of Mamie Morrison Thurman. But to this day, no one knows truly who it was that committed this heinous act. So a few months ago, I did something that absolutely changed my work days, and it's not an app or some kind of organizer. I signed up for Factor, a service that delivers delicious, ready-to-eat meals to my door so that when I'm in the middle of writing or editing or whatever it is I'm hyper-focused in on and just don't have time for lunch, much less figure out what to eat and whether or not it's healthy, I've got something great to eat there right away. You see, every Factor meal is delivered fresh, never having been frozen. Plus, they're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and even ready to go in just 2 minutes. And of course, to keep you from getting bored, there are over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Something for everyone. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. And y'all, I'm not kidding when I say I really did sign up for this months ago. Seriously, well before they became a sponsor of the show. So I'm excited to be able to give you today's offer. Head to factormeals.com/southerngothic50 and use code southerngothic50 to get 50% off. That's code southerngothic50 at factormeals.com/southerngothic50 to get 50% off. Y'all, I want to take a quick minute to tell you about one of my favorite nonprofit organizations here in Middle Tennessee. It's called Poster Nashville. Now, this organization supports people during times of housing or medical crises by providing compassionate, temporary care for their pets. That's right. Poster helps secure loving homes for beloved little furballs when their human companions are going through things that might otherwise cause them to have to give them up. But since Poster began back in 2020, they've been able to reunite nearly 250 pets with their loving pet parents after they were able to secure housing, keeping families together through tough times. Of course, y'all, I have to say from personal experience, it's been an awesome program to be around. My kids and I have been fortunate enough to hang out with some of the pups, and trust me, what Poster is doing through a devoted network of volunteers is absolutely heartwarming. So if you'd like to help, Poster is in the middle of their annual fundraiser right now, trying to hit a goal of $20,000, and it would mean the world to me if you'd consider helping us get there. All you got to do is visit southerngothicmedia.com/bark. That's right, southerngothicmedia.com/bark. Mamie Thurman was born in 1900 in Kentucky to George A. Morrison and Ollie Reynolds. Tragically, it seemed as if her mother passed away while giving birth to her brother Theodore the following year. And since their father, George, was known to be a severe alcoholic, Mamie and Theodore were left in the care of her maternal grandparents. Regrettably, we don't know anything about her early life, but in 1920, Mamie worked at the Jeffries Hotel, where she met her husband, Alvin Jack Thurman, a man 16 years older than her, with gray eyes and dark hair. The two were married on April 7, 1920, and several years later, in 1924, they moved to Logan, West Virginia, eventually settling into a two-room apartment above a garage located on the property of Harry Robertson. Robertson was not only the head bookkeeper at Guyon Valley Bank, but he was also the president of the Logan City Commission, which, for all intents and purposes, was the mayor. And as such, when Jack Thurman began working as a patrolman for the police department, it was Robertson who appointed him a position working the graveyard shift, since Jack didn't drive. At the time, that likely seemed as if he was doing Jack a favor, but now, in retrospect, Robertson had an ulterior motive, because he and Mamie were having an affair. According to court testimony after Mamie's murder, this romance had been going on for about 2 years, with the couple meeting up at all sorts of places around town. Jack had no idea, though, in spite of the fact that they had most certainly been seen by folks, especially as it was said that they participated in what by all accounts was an illicit club, where not only did gambling and drinking take place, but also promiscuous sex, a secret club that involved some of the town's most prominent citizens. Yet, in spite of the fact that Mamie and Harry's extracurricular activities went on for as long as they did, Robertson's wife, Louise, claimed she wasn't certain of the affair until January of 1932. And when she was asked how she knew, she said it was just a woman's intuition. At the center of it all, though, was a gentleman named Clarence Stevenson, a quote, odd jobs man who rented the attic space of the Robertsons' home. Clarence was a 29-year-old black man who had lost 2.5 fingers in a mining accident, leaving him without too many options in rural West Virginia. So Robertson not only hired Stevenson to take care of his hunting dogs, accompany him on fox hunting trips, and do general maintenance around the house, but also to serve as a bit of a liaison for his affair with Mamie. Frequently, Clarence would pick Mamie up and drive her out to meet Harry. Sometimes, if it was a quick tryst in the car, he'd then just walk around and wait for them to finish, but others, like when he'd take her to the home of Finette Jones on High Street, who rented rooms out by the hour, Clarence would go drive around or get something to eat and come back later. But typically, he drove them home separately. For this reason, it's likely no surprise that on the evening of June 22, 1932, after Mamie was found dead on 22 Mine Road, it was Clarence Stevenson and Harry Robertson who were arrested on suspicion of murder. Emmett Skaggs, the assistant prosecutor, directed the questioning, which lasted all night and into the next morning. But both men stood fast in their claims that they were not involved. Stevenson was quoted in the paper saying specifically,
"Well, if you hang me, you'll hang an innocent man. I didn't do it, and I don't know who did do it. If I were guilty, I'd tell you, I realize my position."
But when the police searched the home of Harry and Louise Robertson, they found some pretty chilling evidence. Bloodstains and a depression in the wall of the basement that they surmised could have been caused by a bullet. They also found several guns in the house, one of which being a .38 caliber, but since no bullets were recovered where Mamie was found, it was impossible to say if this was the gun in question. They also found bloody rags in the Robertson home and bloodstains in their vehicle both on and under the floor mat, as well as on the front fender and on a window. It was later determined that this was human blood, but there wasn't enough to support the claim that Mamie was killed in their house or in the car, as it wasn't spray or spatter. Louise told the police that she last saw Mamie leave the house around 7:30 that evening and claimed that Harry was home by 9 o'clock that night and that the blood found in her home was probably just from when Clarence had suffered a nosebleed a few days before. Jack, on the other hand, was clueless as to what was going on. He told the police that he was at work from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. that night, and that he tried to call Mamie around 1 in the morning, but didn't get an answer. Jack made it clear that he believed they were always on good terms and didn't think that the rumors were true.
"Mamie was a perfect wife to me, and I cannot realize that she would do such things as she's been accused of."
Jack said he started to get worried when he got home that morning and realized their bed hadn't been slept in, so he asked if either Clarence or Harry had seen her, but both told him they hadn't. So Harry Robertson then accompanied Jack Thurman to look for his wife. It seemed, at least according to the police at the time, that neither Jack or Louise were involved in the crime. But as I said, Harry and Clarence were arrested later that day. Robertson was released on bail within hours on a $10,000 bond, but Stevenson was not, a pattern that continued throughout the proceedings that followed, as when they were brought before the magistrate, Clarence was in handcuffs while his employer was free. And then when it came time for indictments, guess who was indicted and who wasn't? The black odd jobs man, not the prominent citizen and bank executive. The subsequent trial wasn't much better, as not only were the charges based entirely on circumstantial evidence and eyewitness testimony, but the folks of Logan County had already made up their minds that Stevenson was guilty.
Silence. evidence in the court.
So accommodations were made and the trial was moved to another county to ensure his safety. In that trial, Harry Robertson testified that, yes, he had an ongoing relationship with Mamie Thurman for several years, but he claimed that the last time he saw her was on Saturday when Stevenson had driven them down to Crooked Creek for about an hour. They had planned to meet again on Tuesday night, but he had to cancel. What he said that was truly baffling, though, was that at some point, for some unknown reason, Mamie had made a list of the names of 16 men that she'd had affairs with and gave it to him. Whether or not this list really existed is anybody's guess, as the names were never released to the public, but it's suspected that they were all members of that group who regularly met for what author F. Keith Davis described as, quote, a secret place for alcohol consumption, wife swapping, illegal gambling, and other nefarious acts. You see, at the time, Logan was in its heyday. Coal was king, and in spite of the economic situation in the rest of the country and even federal prohibition, the rich men over in Logan were making a killing and getting away with whatever they wanted. Robertson refused to say who was on the list, but it's certainly plausible that he just made the whole thing up, either as a bargaining chip for himself or to make Mamie appear like the, quote, vixen of Stratton Street, as one lawyer negatively stereotyped her. Aside from the circumstantial evidence, the main thing that prosecutors used against Clarence Stevenson was that several credible witnesses claimed to have seen him on 22 Mine Road in the early hours of the morning of Wednesday, June 22nd, the time in which Mamie's body had very likely been dumped. The most damning of these witnesses was Myrtle Brown, who said she saw Stevenson in the car on 22 Mine Road. Brown claimed that she was up there on the mountain with several men around 10 or 11 o'clock that Tuesday night. But when the men's behavior got a little sideways, she decided to get out of the car and walk down the mountain alone, testifying that she had huddled in some bushes so as not to be seen by a, quote, black man driving the sedan, but that she clearly saw him and there was a white woman with him in the car. She said she then heard two gunshots and saw the man get in and out of the vehicle before driving away. Now, there were several discrepancies in this story that we're not sure was either due to the paper's description of the trial or because the witness's bias or possibly even just intoxication, but this testimony was incredibly damning. Stevenson clearly denied it, though. He claimed that Harry Robertson had sent him to find Mamie Thurman on Tuesday night after he changed his mind about seeing her and that he'd gone by the home of Finette Jones to see if she was there. When he saw there was no lights on, he proceeded to meet up with Robertson at a restaurant to listen to a prize fight before eventually making his own way home, an alibi that both Harry and his wife Louise corroborated. But even as he testified to this in court, Clarence already knew he had been judged. As the jury deliberated, he told one of the officers,
"No matter what the verdict is, if it is for me or against me, there is just one thing I have to say. I hope they keep searching until they find the right party. I don't believe whoever did it is here. I think they've left the county."
An all-white jury found Clarence Stevenson guilty of first-degree murder in less than an hour. He was then sentenced to life in prison, and while he received an incredible amount of support from the NAACP and local churches for an appeal, the Supreme Court of West Virginia rejected it in 1933. Clarence Stevenson died in 1942 in Huttonsville Prison of stomach cancer, and he continued to maintain all of those years that he had absolutely nothing to do with Mamie Thurman's murder.
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
One particular argument, he ended up dislocating Ava's jaw. Ava, she was such a tough cookie. Rather than cry or scream or anything like that, she...
Or call the police.
She should have, exactly. What does she do? She takes an ashtray and she knocks him over the head and knocks him unconscious. That's how she fought back. She didn't know what to do, so she called Louis B. Mayer. I think I've killed Howard Hughes. What do I do?
Revisit a time when the pictures were still big and everyone was ready for their close-up. When you want Tyrone Power instead of Tom Hardy, Jennifer Jones instead of Jennifer Lawrence, or Robert Mitchum rather than Robert Pattinson, then From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
While Clarence Stevenson may have been found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison for the death of Mamie Thurman, most people still refer to this case as entirely unsolved, as many who've done research into this trial believe that Stevenson was actually set up as a fall guy, and even if he was somehow involved, it's doubtful that he did much more than the bidding of the folks with more sway than himself. After all, the physical evidence used to indict Stevenson also implicated Robertson as well, like the blood in his house and vehicle, as well as the .38 caliber weapon. On top of that, Louise Robertson testified that her husband was home in bed by 11 p.m. on that fateful night, giving him an alibi that the court accepted. But they didn't accept that she also said Clarence was home at the same time, too. It's also important to note that neither Louise nor Harry ever implicated Clarence Stevenson, nor did they accuse him or otherwise defame him in any way in their testimonies. So who was it that murdered Mamie Thurman? As I said, most folks actually believe that Clarence was completely innocent, but there is a theory that claims that maybe he was hired to dump the body while not actually participating in the murder itself. Another cites jealousy as a motive in the case and claims that it may have been Louise Robertson who either killed Mamie in a jealous rage and had Clarence take care of it, or that Louise might have hired someone else to commit the crime altogether. Louise and Mamie were friends for years prior to her discovery of the affair, and it's said that she went through a lot of turmoil trying to convince her husband to end the relationship when she did find out. So some do believe it could be her. But this seems unlikely because the brutal act that brought an end to Mamie's life was that horrific slashing of her throat, and that doesn't quite fit Louise's MO. That being said, folks have also suspected Mamie's death to be at the hands of her husband, Jack, who told the court he had no idea what was going on, which sounds a little unbelievable considering how many people were aware of her actions. Now, suspicion on Jack was actually squashed by several of his co-workers who vouched for his whereabouts all night, but it is possible they lied for him. Most folks, however, believe that Harry Robertson killed her himself, either in a jealous rage because of the 16 other names she'd given to him, or as a way to silence her and exposing the nefarious actions of those prominent men in town. But the most disturbing theory of all is that the individual who killed her never made it into the police's crosshairs, and that Mamie's death might have had more to do with the corruption taking place in Logan than anything else. And with that in mind, some folks have speculated that her murder might have been the result of those men on that mysterious list. We will likely never know.
I hope they keep searching until they find the right party. I don't believe whoever did it is here. I think they've left the county.
But it's for this reason that legend claims Mamie Thurman's spirit has not rested even after all of these years. As locals say, her specter still haunts 22 Mine Road and that short stretch of Highway 119. Author F. Keith Davis described the mysterious specter in his book, The Secret Life and Brutal Death of Mamie Thurman.
Hundreds of adults over the years have claimed to witness chilling visions of a pale, translucent form of a woman walking alongside the roadside on what is now called Corridor G. Others report unsettling human screams coming from the direction of Trace Mountain. There are many who still claim to have talked with the poltergeist. In most cases, it was described as sorrowful and tormented.
Of course, we already told you that the most infamous tales of folks coming into contact with Mamie's apparition are the coal truck drivers who purportedly picked up a woman in white hitchhiking on the side of the road who, quote, unexplainably vanishes before she reaches her destination. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this is a pretty typical type of haunting, the lady in white, but it isn't the one that attracts folks out to 22 Mine Road the most and truly put it on the map of haunted locations. That would be the urban legend that says Mamie's spirit will push cars parked at the foot of the hill back uphill in an attempt to convince the driver to go search for some answer that will help bring her justice. Like I said, there are a ton of YouTube videos of people doing this, but unfortunately, in this case, I'm going to be a skeptic, because this type of phenomenon has been debunked in a number of other locations, and I've even talked about one down in Florida before called Spook Hill. I did that in one of our Halloween campfire tales.
As I mentioned, Spook Hill is what folks call a gravity hill, a type of location that can be found all over the world. These sites are often steeped in folklore, and why wouldn't they be? But in reality, they're nothing more than a trick on human perception, because they all have an obstructed view of the horizon, so it's difficult for a person to judge the slope in front of them.
So, as I said, it might seem like your car is going backwards uphill, but the reality is that spot on those winding Appalachian roads is just playing a trick on your perception. Although, I can't say the same for the lady in white. Even if the urban legend of 22 Mine Road is nothing more than an optical illusion, it doesn't change the fact that folks still claim to see Mamie's spirit there as well. And for a case that was supposedly solved, this local lore has done an incredible service to the memory of Mamie Thurman. keeping the mystery alive after almost a century, maintaining a small glimmer of hope that maybe, one day, justice will be found. My name is Brandon Schecksnyder, and you are listening to Southern Gothic. Southern Gothic is an independent podcast produced by Southern Gothic Media. This episode was researched by Loretta Allen and written by Brandon Schecksnyder. If you're a fan of the show, consider becoming a supporter over on Patreon or signing up for one of our premium services that give you ad-free versions available on all your favorite apps. Just visit southerngothicmedia.com/listen for links. And y'all, as always, thanks for listening.
Lucky Lady Shacks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever wondered who the Mary was from Bloody Mary? If the Loch Ness Monster was real, or if Ouija boards actually worked? On each episode of the family-friendly Unspookable, we look at the histories and mysteries behind your favorite scary stories, myths, and urban legends to get the real stories behind the scares. Want to solve your next mystery? Find and follow Unspookable now, wherever you get your podcasts.